Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today is Friday, August 26th. Almost the end of August, Tori.
Almost the end of August.
Yes, we'll be coming back next week and we'll be looking at September.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. How are you doing, Tori?
Good, how are you?
Good. We have a nice overcast morning. The end of this heat that we've been having.
Finally,
here.
That's right.
Yes, and we are truly appreciative of that. Whoever's responsible for the weather, thank you. We appreciate that. In a few minutes, we're going to get to our guest, a very fascinating guest, and it's going to be very interesting. A couple things. You probably heard of this Leslie Jones thing.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, tell me who she is. I don't even know who
she is.
You're
adorable that you don't know who she is.
Really? Why?
Yes, because she's all over this year. So she's this 48-year-old comic, and she went and got on SNL. And she's fantastic, and she does a lot of like screaming rants at the desk pieces. She's very funny. And then she started. She got started in Ghostbusters, the female remake.
Oh.
And then she started on this weird like anti Leslie Jones Twitter troll. People started for some reason targeting her, and she got so upset that she had to leave Twitter. And then she started making a new account of her watching the Olympics, and NBC loved it so much they hired her, and she went to Rio, and it was this resurrection, and she was tweeting again for USA, and she was great. Everyone loved her. And then all of a sudden this week, those trolls hacked into her account and posted nude photos all over her LeslieJones.com website. And so now she's had to take that down. She's just it's a weird victim. She's become a victim of all the hacking and the trolls all on her.
Yeah.
It's a weird target, but she has been, she's been just raked through the coals with these trolls.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to rhyme.
So now my question is, what nude photos of hers?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. And it's just, they hacked into her. Her photos.
Photos. Yeah, and stuff. Yeah.
And she's this really cool, dignified, awesome woman. At one point, no one would dress her for the award ceremony, so she tweeted it out. And then Christian Siriano of Project Runway was like, well, I will. And she slayed in this red off-the-shoulder trumpet. Ugh. She looked phenomenal.
Really?
So she's got this, like, she keeps getting pushed down and then back up again. But I don't know why she's become the target of internet hacking.
Yeah, she gets bullied, huh?
It's very weird, but she alone has had, like, a remarkable amount of cyberbullying.
Maybe she pissed somebody off. We never know, you know?
It's very weird. Very hateful racial death threats. I mean, it's very weird.
Oh, really? So
race-based,
do you think?
Very, very, very racist.
Oh, so they made, like, comments and stuff about it?
Oh, terrible. The whole Twitter thing was racist. Then this new hacking thing was racist. It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
Wow. And she's a woman, too. It may have to do with that, too, you know?
I know, but she's this, like, cool, strong, independent, stand-up comic. What are you doing with that?
Yeah,
no, she's not hurting anybody.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I know. There's so many haters out there, you know. You just got to... And they all come out on the internet, you know.
The internet.
It gives them such a platform to be on. But I feel bad for her. But it just goes to show you, man, don't keep nude pictures of yourself anywhere. Why do you need those, you know? Send them on... don't take them all.
You don't take nude pictures of yourself?
No.
It's a shame.
No, I don't take nude pictures of people I'm with either.
Okay.
Yeah, because you don't know where it might end up.
That's true.
You know?
No, it's true.
Yeah, I mean, these guys all send, like, dick pics and stuff like that. You know, I mean, what is that?
You know? Yeah, you got to be careful. Everything is readable now.
Yeah.
Nothing is being thrown away.
Exactly, yeah. But, you know, what can he do, man?
Yeah.
What can he do? So I feel bad for her, but... yeah, apparently there's a lot of support for her.
Now, in the comic world, there's a ton of support for a feminist world. There's a lot of support for, like, Black Lives Matter and women and people who aren't racist. There's a lot of support. So it only brought her back into the public eye.
Right.
So it's great for her, but she just went through the rakes. I mean, terrible things were said.
Yeah, that's terrible, man.
I get it if she's a controversial figure, but she's not.
Yeah.
She's just a stand-up actress. Weird.
Well, we'll see what they're going to do to Donald Trump.
Good God.
To his website.
Oh, God. Please, someone find something. Please.
Richard Branson crashed his bike.
Oh, really?
Thought he was going to die. Look, that's a pretty bad picture they're having of him here. I don't know people riding bikes, man. I'm not one for them.
Was it a motorcycle or just a bike?
I think it's a motorcycle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe
he was bicycling.
Yeah, maybe he was. I don't know what the hell's going on. Crashes his bike. Yeah, I mean, if you crash a bike, it's probably a motorcycle, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little wimpy if it's just like, his I was cycling alone bike. In the woods.
Yeah.
Yeah, just bicycle.
No. Actually, he was cycling. I'm
there you
sorry,
go.
You're
I
right.
I thought so. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So he hit a speed bump and it threw him in the air.
We've all heard of Formula One, but...
I hate these videos that start playing right away.
Yeah, that's really annoying.
Yeah.
And you don't know where they're coming from.
Yeah, exactly. And I just lost my story here, but there was something about the iPhone being hacked.
The update or something.
Yeah,
I always wait on an update for like 2 weeks because always there's a bug and then it's like worked out.
Right, but now people are hacking iPhones to. They're saying actually, you see this Israeli company made the software that allows people to track another person's mobile phone.
Oh.
So they're saying that some government organizations or whatever. Have been following people. So
that's
governments.
Not news. We know that.
Yeah. But just beware of what you put on your phone, you know.
Yeah. Naked. They're looking at your naked pictures, the government.
Exactly. What is it? Naked pictures and all this stuff. Don't put that stuff on your phone, man. it's just too vulnerable, you know?
There you go. Protect
it's
yourself.
Too vulnerable, exactly.
You hear about the EpiPen?
I've heard something about that. What is it, like they raised the price a lot?
Yeah,
or something?
And then this chick started just like a little tiny little petition online for her like 800 Facebook friends and was like, hey, stupid pharmacy company, they raised it like $600 an EpiPen.
Wow.
And if you have severe allergies, you need one at school, one at home, one at the car.
Oh, really?
You'll inject yourself if you have an allergy.
Right.
It used to be like $190 for two. Now it was $600. Ambulances couldn't afford it. So, and they did it for pure profit. So she sent this stupid little Facebook petition and it went viral.
Really?
And they changed it.
Wow.
And now it went down in price. Like Clinton said something. I mean, it's great.
Yeah.
Good for her.
There you go. You see, sometimes people can do good things,
too.
Social
media.
$500, man. They have no qualms about it.
No.
Yeah.
And it's bad. And it was, like, literally for greed. There was no other reason. And these people, like, can't hardly afford. I mean, you need if you need an EpiPen, you need it everywhere, you know?
Wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Very bad stuff. War still going on in Syria. I guess 11 children died in an airstrike. And that's what's called collateral damage, and that's unfortunate. But kids are dying, people are dying, and I don't think it's going to be over anytime soon there.
No, I think
it's probably never going to be over.
It's a very hard knot to untangle, and it's going to take a lot of patience and a lot of level-headedness, which is so Trump, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it is, right?
No, I just mean I think it's a very sensitive knot. I picture the Middle East very sensitive knot right now, and it takes someone very cool, level-headed.
Yeah, well, it always is.
Yes.
That's what the Middle East is about, you know. If it was peaceful there, it would be too boring, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Well, so we have a weekend coming. I'm looking forward to that. Get some rest and stuff, which never hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Never hurts at all. And we're going to bring in our guest right now. Let me just bring up his website real quick. And we're joined by Dr. Babak Dadvand. Did I say it okay?
Absolutely perfect.
Great. I've been practicing it this morning since you told me, so there we go. Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Tori, for having me.
Of course.
So you're a Los Angeles Beverly Hills doctor.
Yes.
A plastic surgeon?
Yes.
Okay. So, we'll get to all that and stuff, but a little bit about your background and everything. Are you originally from L.A.?
No, I was actually, I was born in Iran, but moved to the States when I was 4 or 5, but grew up in Philadelphia, so I'm an East Coaster.
Oh, really?
Philly.
Yeah. Good old Philly.
Yeah.
What was it like growing up there for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great childhood, you know. It was, both my parents are doctors, and so it's kind of entering the family business, so to speak, but I had a great childhood. You know, it's the East Coast is definitely a different vibe and energy than the West Coast, and not in a good or bad way, just a different way.
Right.
You know, but I moved to the West Coast about 10 years ago to Los Angeles Purely for the weather, to really? Be, to be honest with you. One of the things about the seasons is that Southern California, we celebrate the two best seasons, which for me is spring and summer.
So. Yeah, there you go. If we get a spring here, you know. But sounds good. Do you have any siblings?
Yeah, so I have a, I'm the oldest, and I have a sister and a brother. My sister's also a doctor, and my brother's here in L.A., trying to make it as a director and a screenwriter. So.
There you go.
And, and I'll tell you a little interesting story, too, because my parents never wanted any of their kids to be doctors, okay?
Really?
They wanted me to... I was a violinist and a painter. They wanted me to be a professional violinist.
Wow.
They wanted my sister to be an English professor, and we both become doctors, and we kind of joke with our... with our parents that, you know, our little brother is the only one that made mom and dad proud by going in the arts. So we're the disappointments.
I like your parents.
Yeah. I know everybody says go become a doctor.
Oh,
they're
God.
Like, go be a violinist.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other way around.
Yeah, it's crazy for Iranian parents to want their kids to go into the arts.
So rare.
That's true. Now, were you the creative type when you were younger?
Yeah, definitely.
So you did play violin?
I played for about 15 years.
Wow.
It was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
That means really good. When a violinist says, I was pretty good.
Yeah, but I just never saw it as my, you know, my calling or something I want to make a living at. And in undergraduate, I was actually a fine arts major, so concentrated in oil painting. So it's always kind of been this yin and yang with me and this kind of schizophrenic approach to the arts and the sciences and why probably subconsciously I started to shift towards plastic surgery.
Yeah, because it's a form of art in a way.
Absolutely.
In a very interesting way.
That's true. Huh?
You know
get
what I'm
to
saying?
Sculpt people.
Yes. Very true.
Wow. That's very interesting. So now, I wanted to ask you, coming from a different country, we were talking about bullying and stuff. Was it difficult for you? I mean, did people give you a hard time?
Yeah, I think, you know, I grew up in the late 70s and 80s, and I can look back and say, yeah, I was bullied a couple of times. I didn't look like most of the other kids in the school, and I didn't even really realize I was being bullied until now that I have my own kids. And, you know, there's such more awareness about issues like this now than in my generation when I was younger. And looking back, I'd say, yeah, I actually was bullied, but just kind of brushed it off as being teased a lot.
Exactly, and you're young, maybe you don't even understand why or anything. You're just like... you're just bullied. This is my life, and that's it. And you know, it's unfortunate, but I think every kid goes through that.
I was bullied
right?
for being a teacher's pet. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can see you as a teacher's pet.
Yeah, I know.
Pet.
Whatever. Fuck you, man.
This is his interview. We're screwing it up now. You'll have to take it out if you want to put it on your website. But no, this is the kind of show it is. We'll try to keep it clean. But
darn it.
Yeah.
Darn.
And so where did you go to school, to college?
So I went to University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. And,
very good school.
Yeah, it's not bad. And, and then graduated from there and went on to med school and then general surgery residency and then plastic surgery. So I was in school for a long time.
That's a long time,
It was 12 years after college.
Wow.
12 years after college.
After college.
After the 4 years of college.
Yeah.
12 full years. Wow.
Yeah.
And you can't work during this time in what you're studying? Or?
So after medical school, you're a resident. So you're working. You're basically cheap labor. But that's also when you're learning your craft as well.
Right.
So that was 8 years of training. You're making a living wage, so to speak. But it's really where you hone your skills and you learn the surgeries and your craft and your field. So
yeah, and it's very important, obviously, to go through a lot of experience and years with this. It's like almost like flying a plane. You know, you need like 1,000 hours or something. You know, because you're dealing with people's lives, right?
Absolutely. It's you know they say that the number 10,000 hours. Mm-hmm. In any profession to become an expert in that, right? Mm. So we definitely put in our hours in those years.
Well, I would rather have someone, like, to be honest, if I was getting plastic surgery, like, if they were like, this is just a plastic surgeon and this is a violinist/oil painter who is also a plastic surgeon, I'd be like, that one. I'll take that one.
Right.
I'll prefer that one. I mean, it's a certain, you know, flair to it. Nuance to it. So that's cool.
Yeah, unless he was like a... really a lover of like Dali and Picasso and Cubism, right?
Yeah, that'd be terrible.
You don't want two eyes on the same side of the face,
no.
right?
No, very interesting though, if it were.
Yeah, but you did have some time to study painting and paintings
Absolutely.
And things like that.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
That's very cool. So you understand the the human body, the way it looks, and
I think that would help. You know, so you certainly don't need to be able to draw or paint to be a fine plastic surgeon. I think what it helped was it trained my eye, you know, so I can look at someone and verbalize everything that they may seem or they may feel is off, but they can't really put to words.
And you're my worst nightmare.
I can easily verbalize it. And also understanding three-dimensional spatial relationships. So in the operating room, it's really important. And I think that was more not from my painting, but from my sculptural background when I was studying. Right. You have to look at the body and the face from three dimensions. It may look good from one angle, but then from the other, it may not be as good. And so sculpture is very similar to that.
So it's sculpture, more than painting, for sure. Wow. So now, what attracted you to plastic surgery? I mean, there's obviously it's a huge medicine's a huge field, and sometimes I'm curious why people make certain decisions. So what drew you to that?
So it's interesting. When I first went into a general surgery training, I wanted to be a vascular surgeon, you know, sewing up blood vessels and doing bypasses. And then during my training there, we were able to rotate on the plastics service.
Because you do a rotation, right?
Yeah,
different things.
Right. And the plastic service they put us on was the reconstructive service, so no cosmetic. And what really struck me was that they're seeing a problem, right? A patient has a problem, and you can come about a solution from different angles, and you don't feel like just such a mechanic. You can be creative and think outside the box to get the patient to their final solution. And that started maybe subconsciously playing to my creativity as far as the fine arts background and trying to think outside the box. And I then did another rotation in plastics later on in my general surgery residency and really enjoyed it. And again, this none of it was cosmetic. It was all reconstructive. And I really enjoyed being able to see a problem and think of different ways to fix it.
And then see the result. I mean, that's the cool thing about it, right? He gets almost an immediate result once they're done healing.
Right.
Yeah.
And the patient's lives are changed forever.
Right. And so I think that's what drew me to it initially. And I think it helped, obviously, that I had a fine arts background, but it wasn't my master plan when I was graduating high school to be a fine arts major and become a plastic surgeon.
Yeah. Sculpt real people.
He's like Dr. Frankenstein.
That's right.
That's funny.
Yeah. So you started your practice back in Pennsylvania?
No, I started here in 2007.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay, so you moved right away after that.
Absolutely. I mean, when you live in cities like Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Indianapolis, you realize life is short, and the weather, those are great cities, but the weather
it's brutal.
Is a lot to be desired. Yeah.
And that's what amazes me is even people that are born and grow up in that weather, they never get used to it, you know?
It's brutal.
Yeah, it's like you would think, okay, you know, so it's always been cold. You don't know anything else.
Right.
But no, you can't stand it, huh?
Yeah, and my parents are still in Philadelphia. I love Philadelphia. I'm the biggest homer for the sports teams. But every time I go back to visit, whether it's in the summer or in the winter, I'm like, how did I ever live here for 20 years? You know, it's either the snow or the humidity. And Tori, you know, growing up in Washington, D.C., right?
Built on a swamp.
Yeah.
Literally. But
really?
Built on a swamp. The Washington Monument sinks a little each year. And that's how humid it is in August. I feel like I'm in a bog.
Yeah.
Really.
Wow, I didn't realize
that. It's almost 100% humidity for the month of August. It's like you walk outside and you're just wet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's terrible, man. So,
but it's a lovely city.
No.
Yeah.
I love D.C. as well.
It's great. Yeah. It really is. In springtime, it's delightful.
That's the best week of the year, right?
The cherry blossoms. Tourists, go somewhere else. No, I'm just kidding.
So when you were thinking plastic surgery, did it occur to you also that probably in L.A. you'll have a bigger market?
You know, it's interesting. There's a plus and a minus to practicing in Beverly Hills or Los Angeles. Obviously, as a city or as a town, it's very open to plastic surgery, always has been. But there's also a lot of competition, too. A lot of plastic surgeons, a lot of people aren't plastic surgeons who are trying to do plastic surgery as well.
Wow.
And so you're competing with all these people. But I always say, you know, the cream always rises to the top. And if you're good at what you do and you're a good doctor and a good person, you'll be fine wherever you go.
Yeah.
And I had a mentor back in my plastics training. He told me, it's like, Bob, just pick where you want to live and then build your practice there. Don't build your practice just out of convenience for another reason. You're good enough that wherever you decide you want to live, you'll be successful. And you'll also be happy because you chose somewhere that you actually enjoy living.
Like the great words of Field of Dreams.
That's right.
If you build it, they will come.
Yes, ma'am.
That's right. But that's true. That's great. Make your dream, do it, plant it, it'll happen.
Right.
Yeah. And like you said, you know, you got to be good. You got to be, mm-hmm. I mean, especially with things like this.
Oh,
you know,
God.
When people botch those surgeries, man, it looks awful. You're ruining somebody's life.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, so that's got to be, I mean, you must be pretty confident in your ability by this point to say, I can do this.
Yes.
Yeah. And not botch it or anything, my God.
Right. And
so are those like the people that...
Confident, but not
cocky.
Cocky,
right?
Because once you get that arrogance, that's when you start making mistakes.
Really? Yeah. Now, those that do all those botched jobs are those the doctors you're describing as that are not plastic surgeons, but they're doing that anyway.
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, listen, I always say if you don't have a complication or if you haven't had to do a revision of your own surgery, you're either lying. Or you don't operate, right? Mm-hmm. Every plastic surgeon, every surgeon, no matter how good they are, has some cases that don't go as initially intended.
Okay.
Obviously, the less trained you are, the higher that risk is. But I would say that you know, everybody can have cases that don't go as well as intended. But yeah, I mean, it's something that as you're trained and you've put in the hours. That chance or that risk is exceptionally low.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, because you just know the techniques. You know how to be a safe surgeon and a good surgeon.
If something
and you're
goes
well
wrong,
rehearsed.
You know
yeah,
what
and
to
you
do.
Know how
yeah.
to treat it.
So your reputation, obviously, is very important.
Yes.
Yeah. Dr. Babak Dadvand, we're talking to him. He's a plastic surgeon, and we're going to get a little more into the details and everything. But obviously, you cover just about any procedure, right? I mean, face, breast, body, and even non-surgical stuff, which is what? Botox and things
Botox
like that?
Botox and fillers.
And
absolutely,
fillers.
Yeah.
So now that's...
Can I ask a question about that?
Sure.
No, you can't. You got to go home. So, what are you doing here?
I mean, not that I would ever do it, but if I were to do Botox with this little thing here, is it important to not go to a med spa and go to a doctor, even if it's like a one little wrinkle?
Listen, I think I'm not obnoxious or egotistical enough to say that only a board-certified plastic surgeon is able to do this. I think someone who's had the training to do
yeah.
it, knows the anatomy, knows the potential risks and complications, and has done a number of these, so they're well practiced. You should be fine.
Okay, good. I'm headed to Zora, I think yeah. is her name. I'm going to him. Trust me.
No, yeah.
Because that's a question I get. A lot of women are like whisper about, but no one knows the answer to.
Right.
Yeah.
Now you do.
Now I do, ladies.
Yeah. And that's another important thing is it's not only for women. I mean, you have male patients as well. Like the men that have breasts and stuff like that. What's that condition called?
Yeah, so it's gynecomastia, and it's interesting. So I'm a board-certified plastic surgeon. I do the full gamut of cosmetic plastic surgeries, but in the last probably 5 or 6 years, I've built up this niche as the go-to guy for gynecomastia surgery or male breast reduction. And it's amazing to me how common of an issue mm-hmm. it is, but how... not really seriously it's taken or kind of joked about still, whether it's in you know, pop culture or, you know, just between friends and so on. But I see a lot of issues with guys with this condition. And, you know, living in Southern California, it's kind of tough, you know.
Yeah,
there's
you
the beach, there are pools, there's...
The image
you
is
know,
everything.
Yeah, and, but yeah. also, you know, it's an active town where people take their shirts off at the beach or pool party. And to get inside these guys' heads and what they deal with on a daily basis, it's actually yeah. pretty impactful, you know.
Right.
How
it
much
can
it,
be embarrassing
it can affect
and stressful.
Them, yeah.
Yeah. And that's interesting because yesterday we had a woman and we talked about bras and breasts, and she was saying also how it's more common, just like you said now, than we think.
Yeah.
Right? Men having breast problems.
Yeah, some studies show up to 30% of men
wow.
are unhappy with the size of their chest. And I, you know, it's interesting. I kind of got into it about 6 years ago when my own male patients who I was treating for other things, whether it was injectables or liposuction or facial things, were asking me about their own chests and kind of looked around the community and I said, you know, no one's really focusing on this. And so
right.
in an attempt to kind of treat my own male patients, I started to focus more and more of my energy to the point where now it's probably one of the most, it absolutely is one of the most common surgeries that I do.
Wow.
I probably do last year, I think over 150 of these. And,
wow.
And I see them all age ranges, from as young as 14 to as old as 64, 65.
Is it a condition or is it obesity or is it hormones? Tell me.
So that's a great question. You know, there's it's definitely a condition. And what it really means, if you break down that word gynecomastia, it just means like feminine breast. And it usually means it's excess breast tissue. Now, there could be some excess fat, but people who are just obese and have fatty chest, that's not true gynecomastia, because if they lost that weight, their chest would likely go down. Right. In true gynecomastia, whether you work out at the gym 4 hours a day doing pec exercises or lose 50 pounds, your chest won't ever
go down
because that breast tissue is resistant to weight loss. And in fact, a lot of guys, they start going to the gym to try and quote-unquote melt it away, but this tissue sitting on top of the
makes
pec
it bigger,
muscle,
it
just pushes it out farther, and they get really frustrated. And they just stop working out, and they get kind of depressed and down about it.
Yeah. So then they have you to solve that problem.
Right.
Now, do you think... do you think it's a result also of, like, maybe extra estrogen in the body or something?
Yeah, so for a lot of causes, you know, there are a lot of different causes. I mean, some of the obvious ones are steroid use.
Really?
So that's the most common I've heard,
Wow. But there's some kind of hormone imbalance leads to it, and usually in favor of estrogen, because then the estrogen stimulates that breast tissue to grow.
I see.
And we were talking about bullying, right? Mm-hmm. Earlier on, did I feel bullied? And I see teenagers in my office quite a bit, and that's a age group where a lot of boys can develop it. Some studies show up to 40% of boys going through puberty can develop gynecomastia. Now, fortunately, most of them, it goes away in a couple of years, but I see that 1% that it doesn't, and they come in at the age of 15, 16. I've had cases where the parents had to pull their kids out of school and homeschooled because they were bullied so much, and they start withdrawing. They don't want to participate in gym, that sort of thing. And for me, when I see a teenager who has this, I first ask them, how long have you had it? Mm-hmm. If it's less than 3 years, I'm likely not going to operate on them because, like I said, most of them, it goes away. But if it's been more than 3 years and they don't have any other hormone imbalances or any other funky medical history, I'll operate on them.
Yeah.
know, because why wait? Put an arbitrary number, wait till you're 18, wait till you're 20.
Right.
Why?
There's no
evidence to say that it'll get better if you wait two more years as opposed to the first four.
That's true, yeah. It just makes your self-confidence
worse. Oh, my God, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
I really can't, because it's like right at that time when everyone's looking at the bodies so intensely, and really, breasts are everything.
Right.
Like boobs for, you know, guys are thinking about it, women are thinking about it, and then for a guy to have that, it's just dreadful.
And they're already going through so many other physical changes.
Exactly.
With
like
skin
acne
problems,
and
pimples, you know, facial hair, that sort of stuff.
So I would, if I ever had a kid like that and it had been more than 3 years and you felt it was medically safe, I have no issue with getting that fixed.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's true. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things, obviously, you know, if people could do something about their bodies, they would probably reinvent them or something, you know. A lot of people, I think most people are not happy with their bodies. At least that's what I read.
Especially Los Angeles.
Yeah, I guess,
And, but, you know, Sam, one thing you mentioned, too, men are a lot more open to plastic surgery now than they were maybe 10 years ago. And I think that's part of this kind of paradigm shift in society. Like, it's just more talked about. Mm-hmm. There are more TV shows
it's in
about
pop
it.
Now, yeah.
Yeah, and they're seeing it's not just like celebrities and you know, super wealthy, you know, women. It's all ages, both genders, and they're coming in more for these procedures. And I always see these guys coming in. Some of them still say, you know, I didn't even know there was a name for this. I didn't even know something could be done, and I just happened to find it on the internet. And so I think it's slowly getting more and more talked about, and it's good. You know,
so you're a lifesaver for these people, you know?
I'm a quality of lifesaver.
Hashtag quality of lifesaver.
Yeah.
That's true, though. I mean, I've had friends that have had reconstruction, like, on their noses, and it's just changed their entire lives. And you wouldn't know. It's not a perky thing. It's a real a bump or a hook or something that they look at every single day and like
right, and they
dread.
See it stands out,
and it's changed their lives.
Right.
So I think the stigma, at least in LA, of course it is, but I think because it trickled into pop culture, has gone away a little bit. If you have this and you get something, it's not like, oh, she has a nose job. I remember growing up, that was the thing.
Right.
And then literally in the last 5-10 years, it's just changed.
Yeah, and I think it's the same with injections too.
Yeah,
Botox.
Absolutely.
I mean, a lot of celebrities have come out talking about how they've gotten Botox, and it's really no big deal. I mean, I bet you if you line up 100 people, at least 50 of them have had some kind of injectable, you know, and I probably even higher number have had some kind of, you know, aesthetic treatment, whether it's a peel or a laser or a microdermabrasion. It really is. These are little things that you can do to make yourself feel good and get your outside to start matching how you feel on the inside.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess when you're busy, you do several of these a day, right?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So,
I mean,
yeah.
There's Botox parties. You can go have them when you hang out and they come boop, boop, boop.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's safe, but yeah. I've heard those on Real Housewives.
Yeah. Yeah. But every day you have different kinds of procedures and everything like this. And,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you did like 150 of those just in the past, what?
Year.
A year. That's a lot of work that you're doing and a lot of people you're helping, you know, mm-hmm. which is very cool. For those of you joining us, we're talking to Dr. Babak Dadvan. Am I saying it correctly?
You're Dadvan. Perfect. Two for okay. two.
Nice
yeah, there
job,
you go.
Sam.
I'm trying. I'm sure I'm not saying it 100%, but that's okay.
It took me 8 years to say my own name correctly. So the fact that you're getting it on the first and second
Gold
try,
star.
Fantastic.
There you go.
Have you ever seen people who are addicted to it and you can tell?
Absolutely.
Is it easy to tell?
Oh, it's easy to tell. It takes a certain bit of skill to kind of let them off easy, you know, and to tell them that, you know, maybe this isn't, you know, the right thing for you to be doing, or maybe I'm not the right surgeon for you. And it's, you know, I think one of the tip-offs is somebody who comes in, and it's not necessarily the person who has the huge lips
or the
super pulled
like
and
the
shiny
lion woman,
face.
Right.
Yeah. That's that anybody can tell, right? I mean,
right.
You don't have to be a plastic surgeon to know that that person has some kind of underlying psychological issue. The other, the more subtle one is someone who comes in and whether it's their nose or their breast, and they say, you know, doc, I can't leave the house. I can't have a relationship because of my nose. And you're kind of looking at their nose and it's not bad, you know, but it should not be anything that's keeping them from living a life. And then you start to wonder, okay, if you take this patient on as a surgery and you do the surgery, are they still going to be unhappy, you know, because are you trying to treat something inside their head by doing a physical outward surgery.
Yeah. So you have to think about it.
And that's the skill that you develop in practice. The more you start to speak with patients and you start to see the different nuances in people's psychology. It's interesting. As a plastic surgeon, you're not just a doctor. Sometimes you're like a psychologist
or a therapist. Right? Yeah.
I mean, people tell you their deepest secrets. You know, you hear about relationship issues. And you have to take all that in and still come to a really safe and sound medical decision for that patient. And like I always say, when you operate on someone, that relationship is going to be there now, and you're responsible. It's always easy to know who to operate on. It's always a skill to know who not to operate on.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true, yeah.
You want a reluctant surgeon sometimes. You don't want an aggressive. Especially plastic surgery, I would want, if I ever had it, I'd be someone very reluctant to do anything big or big changes, because then it's like I'm not myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. You guys can follow us by going to the website, drdadvanplasticsurgery.com. If you don't remember that, I would imagine if someone just Googled your last name, they'd probably find you, right?
Yeah.
In plastic surgery or something.
If they got kind of close with the spelling, I should probably come up.
Yeah. D-A-D-V-A-N-D. It's pretty simple, folks. So you can find out more about the services and everything. Beautiful website. It's got a lot of stuff on here. You have pictures of everything and very interesting. So now if when someone's ready for something like this, they come to you for a consultation first,
yes,
right?
Absolutely. That's the most important thing.
And you do turn people down, right?
Yeah, I mean there are cases where I just say, look, I don't think you should have this done. I don't think this is going to make an improvement, or I'm not the right surgeon for you. You know, it's just not ethically responsible to just operate on everybody. Mm-hmm. This is surgery. You know, this is impacting people's lives. And I, you know, when you do a lot of plastic surgery, you also see a lot of patients who come in for revisions, meaning they've had it somewhere else and it didn't go so well. And you realize they initially went for something relatively straightforward, wanting it to enhance them, and now it's become the bane of their existence, and it's a problem, and it's caused pain, it's caused psychological or physical pain, and you want to make sure that you're not that initial doctor, and so you always want to make sure that you're making a decision in their best interest and not just for you know, the money or to have a surgery or a case, because money comes and goes. And in my opinion, relationships are there for a long term. So
that's true.
That's so interesting. My mom had a very minor surgery, and my dad asked the guy who recommended, who would you have your wife be operated on? And he said, this guy. And so they went to this guy. It was very laparoscopic, right through the belly button, and she crashed on the table. And thank God they had researched and done their diligence, because he knew what to do. He went in, like, MASH style, got that spleen out. But, like, they thought about which surgeon would work best.
Right.
And they prepared, which I thought was really interesting. Not just, oh, yeah, whoever, you know.
Yeah, it's very important. I mean, we sometimes spend more time, you know, reviewing or looking up the restaurants we're going to eat at on Yelp or on internet than the surgeon that's going to operate on
us.
And I think that that's always been a kind of a shocking thing for me, that people research these things that are really not a big deal, like where you're going to eat, as opposed to someone who's going to actually put a scalpel to them.
Right.
That's so true.
That's true, yeah.
I wish there was a Yelp for doctors.
Well, there are doctors on Yelp, but
like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe that's not the way to find a doctor on Yelp.
Well, it's better than nothing, right?
Well, like, yeah, but you probably want referrals or something, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I would... Yeah, you want somebody good, you know.
Yeah, and I want to hear what other people's responses have been in there. Yeah, exactly.
My advice to patients is, you know, you go to more than one consultation. Mm-hmm. Even for me, when someone comes to me, I say, yeah, go to a couple more consultations. And you go based on several things. The surgeon's experience, their results from prior surgeries, but also this kind of like...
Vibe, right?
Like vibe, this gut feeling of how you feel like you get on with that surgeon. Because the surgeon's interviewing you just as much as you're interviewing them, right? I'm like, I look at patients and am I the right doctor, or is that patient the right fit for me, for my practice? And it goes both ways. And I think they should take all those things into consideration, not just the cost, not just, you know, the location or what have you. I think it's all those things. Mm-hmm. But there's a gut feeling that patients have towards a physician. And it's vice versa, too.
Right. And don't deny that. Yeah, my mom had that gut feeling. She said, this is the one. Don't deny that instinct, that vibe, even if it's kind of woohoo.
Right.
Yeah. Now, I see you're friendly with the LGBT community and everything, transgender and all that. Do you do those kind of surgeries,
too? Yeah, so that's another niche of mine that I'm really proud of and excited about. I do... transgender top surgery, so I don't do below the belt, but above the belt, breasts and face. So whether it's F to M or female to male or M to F. And the reason why I'm particularly proud about that is because I feel like in the next 5 years, the transgender community is going to go through a lot of the barriers being broken down that the LGBT or the LGB community went through, you know, 5 years ago.
It's the new LG, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, with the, you know, more acceptance laws that are, you know, despite the North Carolina bathroom bill that's passed, which actually is a blessing in disguise, if you think about it,
because
it brought up such an uproar against it, and companies pulling out of North Carolina.
And Target doing their whole...
Yeah, and I think that it's just raised awareness, and it's just in its early stages, I think. I think Caitlyn Jenner... You know, whatever you may think about Caitlyn Jenner, you know, from a pop culture standpoint, the strides that she made and living that public of a life for 60 some years before and then transitioning, I think it just opens it up. And I'm pretty excited to see what happens in the next 5 years with the transgender community.
Yeah.
As a pop culture person, as soon as it gets into pop culture, now we can talk about it.
Absolutely.
And it trickles, and then it's just normal conversation.
Yeah.
So as soon as you hit pop culture, you're on your way.
Right. And I think, you know, those patients for me are, they're exceptional. I mean, it's one of the most satisfying surgeries that I do. Probably, I would actually say it's the most satisfying surgery that I do, other than, say, the, you know, reconstructive surgeries for cancer reconstruction and so on. But, the day of the reveal on those surgeries, it's amazing. I mean, from my standpoint, there's usually tears on the patient's standpoint, or especially when they have family support too. The family's in the room when I take the dressings off sometimes, and there's waterworks, and it's really cool.
Right. So you do this, you're not judgmental, you do your work, you help people, and I mean, it's noble, you know, because... The thing is that I can't imagine something that would be more difficult to go through than if you feel you're in the wrong body.
Yes, and then, and then you take the dressings off and you see what you had always imagined.
Right.
That is like a dream literally coming true.
Yeah, and for me, you know, as a plastic surgeon, you know, I'm a pretty philosophical guy. I understand fully that, you know, there can be a lot of fluff and superficiality in my profession, especially like the cosmetics portion of it. But I always kind of searching for something that makes me feel like I'm impacting somebody's life. And I feel like, you know, I do surgeries that I feel like are not just going to make them look better, but really change the trajectory of their life. And I think in the transgender, it really is changing the trajectory of their life. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have a much higher, you know, suicide rate than the average population. And when you get to, like you said, Tori, they can see in the mirror now how they've felt inside since they were maybe 5 years old or as young as they can remember. It's a pretty amazing thing.
It's a miracle
thing.
For them, yeah. Right.
It really like being is. Reborn.
Huh? Yeah, yeah. It literally is.
Wow. Wow. Well, Dr. Dadvand, everybody can go to the website and just Google Dadvand, D-A-D-V-A-N-D, board-certified plastic surgeon in Beverly Hills. I know that, I mean, I'm feeling a lot more secure if I wanted to do something like this, knowing your background, mm-hmm. your abilities, and so forth. I wanted to ask you, as far as like breast augmentation, we were talking about that yesterday. Do you find that women come in who don't really need it, or you feel they don't really need it?
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be that percentage of patient. I mean, need is always an interesting word mm-hmm. with plastic surgery. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you really need any of it? It's not a liver transplant, right?
Right.
You're not going to die.
But you're right. It's more of a, will it help you live
exactly.
a more fulfilling life? And,
right.
and I think that's a very subjective thing. I don't try and push my opinion on what a patient wants as far as, say, breast augmentation. If someone has, in my opinion, a good size breast, but they want to go larger, as long as they're not going so much larger that it's going to cause problems down the line,
right.
meaning implants that are going to overstretch them or cause issues down the line, then I think that that's fine.
Yeah, yeah. So you find people that, or women that have not necessarily small breasts, but they just want to change the shape.
Yeah, and I see especially
like
women who've had either weight loss or pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like
a lot of women feel that after pregnancy or breastfeeding, that their breasts have deflated.
Right.
And there's nothing that you can do to fix
that. That's what
she
was saying yesterday. There's nothing you can work out or eat. Yeah.
That's true,
you
yeah.
know, other than just gaining a lot of weight, which is not healthy. So I think in those women, it really is a great surgery. And it restores their sense of femininity that what they had before they had kids.
And like we were saying yesterday, not a lot of people would probably notice, but they notice.
They notice.
They feel it, right? So it's like
yeah.
it's not a huge boob lift. It's just like they feel the difference.
Right. And
yeah.
a lot of the women in my practice, they're not coming in for the huge, huge implants.
Is that popular anymore even?
I mean, I think it'll always be popular in some segments.
Yeah,
you know,
the 90s was like...
So. Yeah, it was a, you know, go big or go home
yeah,
mentality.
Yeah.
Right? But I think overall, in everything, people want to look more enhanced, but more naturally enhanced and mm-hmm. rejuvenated, whether it's fillers, you know. So people are veering away from overfilling,
mm-hmm.
Over-injecting. There's also going away from over-inflating as far as implants, because most women don't want that. And as a woman gets older and they have large breast implants, they're just going to feel top-heavy, matronly, kind of
weird,
fat,
yeah.
you know.
Right.
And a lot of women coming in their late 40s and 50s who've had implants in the 80s and 90s want to go smaller.
Yeah, I hear a lot of reduction
yeah.
on the implants in pop culture too.
Yeah.
Like you see those Baywatch babes or Kendra Wilkinson. She's like, I don't want it anymore. I can't handle it.
Right.
Out, out, out.
Yeah.
Go smaller, go home.
That's right. That's a new Texas bumper sticker.
That's right. That's
yeah.
right.
So if you guys are interested in any of these procedures, what's FTM top surgery?
So that's female to male
oh, okay.
top surgery for
okay.
transgender.
And then MTF, which is the other way around.
Right.
Body, face, non-surgical. So you guys can pretty much remake yourselves. You know, spend a week with Dr. Dadvand, you'll...
Done.
Totally different person. Wow. And so people can find you through the website. We can also give out the phone number.
Yeah, absolutely.
I give that out? It's 310-278-4200. You're in Beverly Hills, so it's easy to get to and everything. Thank you so much for joining us.
This was so fascinating.
Pleasure.
Full of a lot of information. And guys, go to the website, check out some more information on this. There's a lot of images before and after and so forth. So you can see really the work, you know. And you've got it in like a million pages, this website, which is amazing.
And one thing I'll
say is in different languages, right. I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. I wrote every word of that website.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Good for you.
It took a long time. But yeah, I wanted it to be something that came from my mouth.
So. Right. Right.
This guy's like amazing. A Renaissance guy.
Yeah.
Oil painter, violinist, writer.
Yeah. I know. He's going to be like the next thing he's going to do is play violin and,
right.
and be like a
I feel like he's
going to
dance
prodigy.
Out of here on like Mikhail Baryshnikov toes or something. All right. See ya.
I was a pretty good break dancer back in the 80s.
Of course you
actually.
Were.
I had my parachute pants. So.
Who didn't?
All right. Well, thanks again for joining
Thank
us.
You,
All
Sam.
The best to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Tori.
Absolutely.
Of course. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Tori.
Absolutely. TGIF, we'll guys.
Yes, Monday. See you then.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.